You're listening to Strictly Business Podcast with Lindsay Williams.
It's Wednesday, so it's time for Wayne on Wednesday. Wayne McCurry is a portfolio manager at FNB Wealth and Investment in Johannesburg. Wayne, last week we were talking about, NVIDIA's numbers, and we sort of speculated about how dangerous it is to have such a dominance, not only in its own market, but also in the general market, and people being so fixated on their results. And their results had come out, and they were amazing results, but they disappointed certain sectors of market participants who are greedy, greedy people. And then we thought, well, what happens if it does this and that? And it reminds me of the title of a film, The Anatomy of a Fall, which was an Oscar-nominated film at the last Oscars, European film. It's quite good, a bit slow. But anyway, let's go through the anatomy of this fall. Results, then a little bit of a recovery and sideways. And then yesterday, a big, big whack.
Yeah. Look, I think a few things. First of all, this is not the South Sea bubble. This is not the tulip bubble. This is not the dot-com bubble. This is a proper company that sells a hell of a lot of things and it's got massive revenue and it makes profits. Okay, so that's the first thing. So the only fault you can find with this company is the share price. Okay, so that's all that's wrong with this company is the share price may be, well, according to the market, it was too high. You know, if you take what it's done this year, first of all, you know, it started off at 50, you know, call it $50, and it ended up at 140. Then it went from 140 down to 100. Then it went back up to, call it 140 again, 130. And now it's heading back to 100 again.
Yeah.
So the only question on this one is, when do you buy it? Is it going to stop at 100? Is it going to stop at 90? Is it going to stop at 80? I don't know the answer to that. All that I do know is this is a very, very good company. And, you know, AI and the chips that these guys make, I mean, there is competition and competition will come. But, you know, for the foreseeable future, this is still a very solid company with proper cash flows and everything like that. The market just pushed the share price too high. Yeah. Not the company's fault. It's the market's fault. If you go longer term on this share, I mean, it's literally up from $5 5 years ago to $150. Now, so that's 2,000% in the last 5 years. So, you know, can it go back to 50? I suppose it can do anything. But, I mean, I literally don't know where the bottom is on this. Another thing we can talk about, you know, and it's now, this is so similar to what happened in August. We're now getting stories, is the economy, is it a hard landing? Will we, you know, is it a soft landing? These stories are surfacing again, exactly the same as they did in August. And I said that then, and I'll say it again now, it is highly unlikely that we are on the cusp of a bear market, not with imminently falling interest rates. So these big tech shares, these things can still fall. But that doesn't signal a bear market by any stretch of the imagination. So, you know, I don't know where the bottom is on NVIDIA. It could be at 100. It could be now at 107. It could be at 80. I don't know where the bottom is, but during this period of weakness, you're getting another chance to buy this share. It's certainly better buying it now around about 100 than it was buying it at 150, 140.
It's very true. And it's interesting the way that you said that, because you didn't say the problem now is if or when to buy it. You said the problem now is when to buy it. So you're still committed to this company, in other words.
Yes, I mean, big tech AI, all of this, it's still around for the foreseeable future.
Okay. The other thing that happened was that after the market closed last night, the Department of Justice in the United States of America, in its wisdom, issued them with something, some order. I don't know about the legal regulatory system in the US, but essentially, I mean, I sent out a message on X this morning, and I did a parody of it. You know, I mean, sorry, NVIDIA, you're far too successful. Your chips are far too good. You've got to make worse chips and make them cheaper so you can compete with the other people. Because I don't understand it.
Look, I think there's two factors to discuss here.
Yes.
First of all, what they've actually, what the Department of Justice actually said, is it said that you are favoring big manufacturers, because the people who buy NVIDIA chips are the chaps who make the computers. You know, it's other tech companies. They're not selling directly to the public.
Of course not.
They say you are incentivizing other companies to only use your product in their product lineup. Now, personally, I don't see anything wrong with that.
No, exactly.
And it's you, if I own Ford Motor Cars and I went to Budget Rent a Car and say, I'll give you a good price if you just buy Fords. You know, so I don't see anything wrong in that. And then the second thing they said was, let me just think about, the first one was, and then the second one was, you're almost becoming like a Google, you know, other people can't muscle in on your product because it's so good, as per your tweet, X, post, whatever, you know. But look, make no mistake, the capitalistic system, well, actually, there's a second thing to mention about NVIDIA, which I said in the beginning here.
Yeah.
Governments don't like companies, organizations, social media, whatever you want to call it, that become too powerful. Now, the classic example is Bell telephones in the 30s or 40s, when they split Ma Bell up into the little baby bells, because they didn't like this business of one company controlling communications in America. They just fundamentally didn't like it. The second good example is the electricity companies. They didn't like, I mean, was it Edison? Yeah, it was Edison Power. They didn't like the fact that Edison Power could decide who gets power and who doesn't get power, and who can cut off power if there's a bit of a crisis, or they were just too powerful. So they were also split up. And governments don't like big social media platforms. They don't like companies like NVIDIA. They're just too powerful. You know, they can actually change the direction of the economy. They can change the direction of politics. I mean, you've heard many politicians moaning about Google. Why when you type in Trump, does only bad news come up? Now, there's never good news. The first 30 articles are all bad news about Trump.
Well, is there any good news about Trump? I mean, that's
what Trump says. He says, you know, your algorithms are biased towards me, against me, whatever you want to say, if you want to put it. You know, so governments don't like things that are seriously powerful. Companies, organizations, social media, people who control major parts of the economy. That's why they got the Competition Commission. You know, it's not to promote competition per se, it's to break up monopolies. That's effectively what it does. And that's a good thing, by the way. I'm not against that.
No.
But I can fully understand why the Department of Justice is going against NVIDIA. It's just too big, and it's, you know, there's no real competition for them. But then, as I stopped making the point earlier on, the capitalistic system is ruthlessly efficient. You know, I can bet you there are hundreds of thousands of techie people burning the midnight oil to make their super chip that's going to compete with NVIDIA.
Yes.
You know, and it will come. There's no that's capitalism for you. You know, if people sniff out a profit somewhere, they sniff out a success somewhere, they jump on that bandwagon very quickly.
I was just thinking about that, actually. I was watching a program with Richard Quest on CNN last night, and he's an aviation buff. I mean, he's a real nerdy sort of plane spotter type.
Yeah, I know him well, yeah.
Yeah, he's good. He's a good chap, I think.
Well, I know him well on TV. He's a very, very good presenter.
Yeah, he's excellent. He's a cut above the rest, actually. But anyway, he loves aeroplanes, and there's obviously been so much negative publicity surrounding Boeing, which is a massive American company and hugely important to the airline industry. It's them and Airbus that dominate. And it suddenly turns out that it's not just the aeroplane manufacturers that, specifically Boeing, that are in trouble. It's also the engine manufacturers. Now, if you want to buy an Airbus, if Wayne Air suddenly comes into being and you decide you want Airbus because of the Boeing problems, you go to Airbus and you say, OK, I'd like 10 A350 Airbuses. Yeah.
You have to get a General Electric or a Rolls-Royce.
No, you can't. You can only buy Rolls-Royce. This is what surprised me. Because Airbus is a European company and Rolls-Royce is a British company. But okay,
well, the Rolls-Royce.
You can only buy Rolls-Royce. You can't buy General Electric. You can't buy Pratt & Whitney. And suddenly, because so many aircraft are being built and there is such a backlog of the demand for new fuel-efficient airlines, which essentially is engines, They've been put together shoddily. And there was one airline that had 45 A350s, 15 of which they've had to ground because it had 40 parts in it. Now, that is where a monopoly does become inefficient. In other words, a monopoly, you want an Airbus, you've got Rolls-Royce as well. It's quite interesting the way that things work and eventually how people get found out, Wayne.
Yeah. Now, look, I got you, but as I said, politicians... Yeah, it was inevitable that someone would start something on NVIDIA. It was just, I mean, the market capitalization of NVIDIA was bigger than the GDP of Canada up at $140. It was virtually the size, it was virtually the market cap of the whole FTSE.
Yeah, I wonder what it would how many African countries you'd have to cobble together in order to come near that as well. I mean, it is scary how much money there is, and also scary how much was wiped off last night. $280 billion dollars or something.
Yeah, but I mean, it's just given back where it was 2-3 months ago. So
yeah, I agree with you.
You know, so yeah, what the hell?
Okay, if it goes to 80,
you're not sweating unless you bought right at the top at 140 and put all of your life savings into it. Then you're sweating, but if you bought at the beginning of the year, you're still smiling happily. Nothing goes up or down in a straight line unless it truly is a bubble, because then those companies just disappear. And I don't think NVIDIA is disappearing. I mean, I can't remember the number now, but they've got turnover in the billions. It's a big company.
It is massive. Wayne, a few results out today. I want to focus on one. It's because you know it intimately, both as probably as a shareholder or prospective shareholder and also as a customer. Nearly a week goes by when you say, well, I went to Woolies and I bought this. I mean, the share price hasn't done particularly well today. Its results came out on a bad day, of course. But was there a distinction between the performance of food and clothing and housewares?
Totally. It's the same old that I've been hearing from Woolies forever.
Yeah.
Okay, putting David Jones aside, okay, and that was an unmitigated disaster, but we know about that.
Yes.
The food side did well. The clothing and household did badly. They tried to talk it up a little bit. You know, it's on a recovery path, but we heard this many times before. You know, they had 1% sales growth, and inflation isn't 1%. You know, so their volumes went backwards. I think food was 14 or something, if I'm not mistaken. It was a very good number. So, and then the country road in Australia, New Zealand was also a complete disaster. I mean, their turnover was down 8% in Aussie dollars or New Zealand dollars. You know, that's not good. Now, I know those economies are suffering, but really Woolworths must just do what many companies have done and just go back to what you're good at. And there, another thing that came out this week was that ShopRite Checkers worked out, we're no good at selling furniture. It's not our game. So they flogged all 600 stores
to Pepco. Yes.
And Pepco's at JD Group forever, and they understand this furniture business. So they just said, no, damn it, no, we're wasting our time and money. Yeah? Let's just concentrate on what we know. Because, I mean, that business obviously wasn't profitable because they sold it for a very low amount, very cheap amount. But also selling something cheap, we can chat about Spar just now. But let's just finish on this one. Right. So I don't know how, I don't know if Woolworths can do it, because a lot of their stores are integrated food and houseware and clothes and everything. But they should just list the clothing business separately if it's possible, because they're detracting value in the share price from the food business. And they better have a very good plan with Country Road. Otherwise, they must just get rid of it like they did with David Jones.
You're very right when you go back to basics. And the reason I say that is because I grew up in the United Kingdom, and Marks and Spencers was the Woolworths of Britain, or rather the other way around. You would go to Marks and Spencers on Marble Arch. I'd take a trip up to London, go to Marks and Spencers Marble Arch before online shopping, and you'd wander around. And I knew what I was going to buy. Basics. I was going to buy T-shirts, polo shirts, white boxer shorts. They were the first things I bought. And it was just so easy to navigate. Then Marks and Spencers became like Woolworths, or Woolworths became like Marks and Spencers. So confusing. Spencer. Yeah. Marks and Spencers became so confusing.
Yeah, I can remember, and this was donkey's years back. This must have been, mid to late 80s.
Yeah.
When Woolworths went away from food and started doing all of these things. And I understand the logic. We've got a good brand. People will buy their clothes and their cutlery and their towels and that from us because we've got a loyal customer base. Turns out to be incorrect. Got a loyal food base, but otherwise the guys will go and shop at Pick and Pay Clothing, Mr. Price, other homeware stores, et cetera, because the Woolly stuff is expensive. It's nice. We've spoken about a few items of their apparel that I find great favor with. But clearly it's not working. You know, I can still remember thinking at the time, are they going to now start selling branded motor car spares, batteries? You know, when they're going to stop exploiting the customer base, or thinking they're going to exploit the customer base. So I don't know if it's practical, but they should just do that. And what Pick and Pay should do is spin out the Pick and Pay Clothing. Those are all standalone stores. That's highly successful. If you want to unlock value, you know, there's a success story in the Pick and Pay. I mean, they've already got Boxer. That's a success story that they're not selling at all, but they're spinning out most of it to raise cash. And if they truly believe they can swing the supermarkets around, they should also sell half of list Pick and Pay Clothing separately, sell half of it and get some cash in, which will give them the ability to actually sort out the supermarket side of the business. And same as I&J. Why does AVI keep I&J? There is just no logic to this story whatsoever. It just is quite frankly nonsensical.
Well, AVI has always been nonsensical. I mean, it was fish and shoes. You think of AVI, you think, well, what was the fishing like this year? And what were the shoe sales like this year? You can't analyze a company like that.
Yeah, exactly. No, but look at the other one. Don't forget their biscuits, eh? That's big. So it's fashion, shoes, biscuits, and fish.
Yeah, what a combination. Wayne, you already answered a question of mine, because I do it every time with Woolies. And that is, yes, come on, spin off the food now. You're a big player, and you would rival the other grocery stores. So anyway, you've answered that. You wanted to talk about Spa. Talking about doing things you're good at. They're obviously not good at being in Poland, and obviously there's been problems in that part of the world. But yeah. Poland, now they've sold it, and the share price, I noticed, is not reacting very well to whatever happened today.
Yeah, I mean, it was
today.
Down 11% at one stage, and we'll come back to that.
Yes.
They've done very well in Ireland, eh? Mm. Spa's done very well in Ireland. It's not their fault they're doing badly in Switzerland. The currency's just too strong there. So what consumers do in Switzerland is they nip across to Italy or France or Germany, buy all their stuff there and come back because it's just too expensive to buy it in Swiss francs. But that's not their fault. But the Poland thing just seems like a disaster. Let's talk about that. So I saw the share price down, and then I looked at the news and I said, but they've sold it now. Surely the share price, you know, wouldn't fall 11%. I think it's down about 6% now.
About 7%, yeah.
Yeah. So you just think, okay, now then let me read them. It turns out they're paying other people money to take it.
That's odd.
Yeah, so what it is as far as I can work out, and I might be wrong, I must make that qualification right up front. I could very well be wrong. As far as I can work it out, whoever's buying it, they've got such a damn long name in Poland there, it takes up a whole paragraph just about. But they're buying it for the equivalent of 185 million rand. So not zlotys, rand. And you think, well, geez, that's nothing for this business. Then you read further, SPAR's got to capitalize the business with 3 billion rand.
Surely that is the responsibility of the purchaser of the business, though. I mean, surely that must be. I mean, so what they're saying is, we'll take the business off your hands, but you've got to tart it up for us.
Yeah. So obviously, it is such a poor business, and they're so happy to get a buyer. But that's like me. That's like you buying my car, but my car needs a new engine. So you say, listen, I'll buy your car for 10,000 rand, but it's going to cost 40,000 to put an engine in, so I must give you 30.
Sounds fair. I know your cars. Yeah. You stand by your cars, Wayne. I mean, any of your cars could go out within a couple of days.
So what I think it is, that company's got serious debt, that SPAR South Africa has underwritten.
Yes.
So they say, listen, if we just sell the operating assets, we've still got to settle the debt. And the debt is more than what this recapitalization is. So this Poland business was obviously way worse than what the market thought it was. You know, I thought when I read 185 million rand, I thought, ooh, that's nothing. But then I read a bit further on, I go, stick in 3 billion rand into the company.
Yeah, well, we shall watch and see if the market has just reacted in its normal knee-jerk fashion or if there's something more to it, and we should steer clear of SPAR for a while. Now, Wayne, I had a food story for you, but I thought, no. I'm going to save that for next week because I know that Wayne McCurry and the world's biggest rugby fan will have stories coming out of their ears about the joint rugby and food extravaganza that they indulged in on Saturday and Sunday night
and Sunday morning.
There you go. Okay.
It was fantastic. So we went off to the Troyville.
Yep.
And we got the presidential suite.
Look at you.
At the Troyville. Mm. Yes. The presidential suite has got two double beds in it. It's got a full lounge and a dining room. So it's big. So we go, and then we had lunch, and lunch was they used each grouping sat at their own table, and they brought platters. Mm. So for starters, we had chorizo, we had calamari, we had peri peri chicken livers, we had the tentacles of the octopus. That's not calamari; it's the sort of the tentacles, very, very crispy.
I love that.
Very tasty.
Yeah.
Lovely, lovely salad as well to go with it, a proper Portuguese salad, lots of feta cheese in it. And then the main course came out, and they bought peri-peri chicken. They bought a steak, and then as many prawns as you could eat, and they were delicious.
How did they do the prawns? Also peri-peri?
No, the sauce is on the table. No, this is just grilled. Mm. So you can put in garlic sauce or peri-peri sauce or whatever you want. Lovely chips. was fantastic. And then we got natas, which is the little Portuguese custard tart for pudding.
Yes.
And also you could, I mean, they are delicious. I probably had about five of them. And then we toodled off to the rugby.
Well, this is the thing. Before you go on, Wayne, I mean, you've just, I mean, I've been trying to keep up with how many things that you've eaten, and obviously there was bread, so you could dip, wipe your plate clean with delicious Portuguese bread. How on earth did you manage? I mean, after that, steaks and prawns and chicken livers and two times calamari types, and so the list goes on. I would have just said to the world's biggest rugby fan, I'm sorry, love, I'm going to toddle back to the presidential and watch it on telly.
No, we had to go to the rugby. And it's so social. I mean, the Troyville's right at Emirates Park.
Yes.
So it's about a 10-minute walk there. And, of course, everyone's in the street with their rugby kit on, doing skottle braais and, you know, just general fun and happiness. Then we got into the stadium. We were lucky to win that game, I think. I don't think we played particularly well.
That's what our mutual friend said as well. But that's another matter. Yeah.
Put that aside. We won, and that's all that matters. And there were fireworks in the grandstand, and people were singing, and the aeroplane flew over. Then after the game, we shuffled off back to the Troyville for dinner.
You must be hungry by this stage.
Of course. And they had a limited menu. You could have prawns, you could have steak, you could have peri-peri chicken, or you could have hake and chips, and I chose the hake and chips.
Oh,
and it was absolutely delicious.
Gosh. So the Troyville, since the revamp or since coming under new ownership, has really made itself into something that it wasn't before. It's always been good, but it sounds fantastic now.
If you look at their main menu, the a la carte menu, I mean, it's extensive. It really is quite a culinary delight to go there. And then we had some nachos again as well. And, of course, we had some wine and we watched the rugby on the TV because they rebroadcast it.
Mm-hmm.
So it was nice to actually see the game because the stand's wonderful and everything, but you don't see much of the game per se. You know, the people are just too small and you obviously don't know all the intricacies and all the happenings and the forward passes and all that sort of stuff. But so that was always fun to watch. And then we went to the presidential suite. And then we woke up and we had a delicious breakfast. I had the farmer's breakfast with eggs, boulevards, beans, grilled tomato, bacon. And then we had a few nachos as well.
Tell me something, Wayne. You know, you spoke to me once about in your warehouse, where you tinker with your cars, many of them, and somewhere near your office there's a pillar between the pillar and the wall, and it's sort of a measuring stick as well.
It's a yearly test. It's a yearly test, and I passed this year. I'm not too sure about next year.
No, because after that you wouldn't get through there, surely. I mean, the gap must be too narrow now for you.
I think it might be a bit of a struggle. I will be honest.
Okay.
Now, there's a pillar in the wall that you've got to fit between the pillar and the wall.
Oh.
So first day in the new year, we do the test.
I can imagine. What fun. Okay, Wayne. Gosh, that spread at the Troyville. I'm going to look up their website as soon as I get off the phone and see what they've done to it. It's very interesting because I used to like it when it was CD. I must admit, it was a CD place, but it was good.
I liked it when it was CD as well because the char's always been good, but it's gone up a notch, to be honest. It's up until probably about 2 years ago, it was already under the new management. But the menu was just like a laminated A4 piece of paper. You know, there wasn't a massive choice. You know, all the traditional Portuguese stuff, the menu now is four times as big. So they obviously got a new chef in, and all the food that came out was delicious. It was warm. You know, and they were very, very well organized. So the world's biggest and myself, we've told the manager there, just if there's a rugby game on, we've got the presidential suite.
Mm.
He said, "You're fine, it's no problem."
Yeah, if you have an argument, you've got the second double bed, which is always useful, I find. Wayne,
you could sleep the whole rugby team in that room.
Well, that would be interesting, but probably wouldn't allow much sleep. But Wayne, thank you very much for your time, as always. Wayne McCurry is a portfolio manager at FNB Wealth and Investment in Johannesburg, and that was Wayne on Wednesday. The views and opinions expressed in these podcasts are those of Lindsay Williams and various contributors and do not reflect the policy, position or opinion of any other agency, organisation, employer or company associated with strictlybusinesspodcast.com. Assumptions made on the analyses are not reflective of the position of any other entity other than the speaker or the author. And since we are critically thinking human beings, these views are always subject to change, revision and rethinking at any time. Please do not hold us to them in perpetuity.